Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch and the first of six very special editions of the Three Martini Lunch, our special year-end awards. These are coveted awards that political figures are clamoring and lobbying heavily day after day, week after week, all year long to get, at least the positive awards. But in the meantime, we hope you had a very Merry Christmas and are enjoying your time with your family. Hopefully you're still on vacation. And our three martinis for our first installment of the year-end awards. Jim, most underrated political figure, most overrated political figure, and the most honest political figure, always the one with the fewest nominations. But we'll get to that one a little bit later. Let's start with most underrated political figure.
Greg, there was a fairly glaringly obvious choice that I decided not to go with, just in case you picked it or just because it just seemed so glaringly obvious that it was almost not worth saying. So instead of picking President-elect Donald Trump, I decided to go with Senator Rob Portman, because people might have expected Trump to be a juggernaut on the political scene, already a celebrity. Rob Portman, most conservatives have heard of him, most conservatives like him. But he's just kind of been there for his first term in Ohio. And I don't think anyone expected that he was going to go out in 2016 and pull off a 21-point victory. I mean, he just went out and crushed his Democratic opposition. This was supposed to be a competitive race. I went up and I checked. In 2010, when he was first elected, he won about 2.1 million votes. This year, he won more than 3 million votes, which was the second most ever for a Senate candidate in Ohio ever. And if you're wondering what the first one was, it was George Voinovich back in 2004, and that one was considered not competitive. So I think Republicans could learn a lot from Rob Portman. You want to talk about a guy who has just figured out what his state wants and how to be pretty darn conservative and win what was widely considered to be a purple or even a purple to blue state. Now, that may be in doubt, of course. But I think in terms of just the guy who just punching above his weight and just dramatically overperforming, I think that's Rob Portman's. That's why I name him the most underrated political figure of this year.
That's an excellent choice. That was supposed to be one of the most competitive Senate races in the country. And as you said, Rob Portman absolutely had his finger on the pulse of Ohio. He was also running against Ted Strickland. And I think the people of Ohio had their fingers on his pulse and were ready to strangle him after his 4 years as governor. So that definitely helped him. But Portman's ability to know who he represented was critical. I am staying with a Senate Republican for this. I thought about Trump, but I picked Trump for that last year since he hadn't fizzled out by this point in 2015. And so I'm going with Pat Toomey. I remember on Election Day that both you and I were basically saying, because we thought Hillary would win Pennsylvania as well, and Katie McGinty was ahead by a little too outside the margin of error in the Senate polls, that it looked like Pat Toomey was done. Senate Republicans in presidential years in Pennsylvania do not have the greatest track record, but Pat Toomey got it done. He won Pennsylvania. He won Pennsylvania. It was a close race, but it was more comfortable than Trump's win over Hillary Clinton. And Pat Toomey is about as conservative as you can possibly get from the state of Pennsylvania and win a statewide race. He did it in 2010, did it in 2016. And if people had their heads on straight, he might have done it starting in 2004. But he lost to Arlen Specter in the primary that year. So we get six more years of Pat Toomey, and he'll be running in a midterm year in 2022. So to have him back is great for conservatives. And to see that he was able to hang on to that seat in a very tough state, in a very tough year, good for Pat Toomey.
Excellent choice there, Greg.
All right, on to overrated. Who do you have there?
All right, so I had thought about giving this to one of my preferred people in politics, guy I like a lot, but who I think proved to be a lot less than his reputation suggested in 2016, and that is Senator Marco Rubio. But then I decided to let him off the hook because, you know, he did go into that Senate reelection fight that everybody thought was going to be close down in Florida. He won by 8 points. It ended up being not that close either, so I think he still got some game. So when you really want to talk about being overrated, and again, not a choice I have any pleasure in saying, but I think the evidence is pretty glaring here, Greg. I think you had to say the Bush family. It's not just that Jeb Bush didn't win. He really did not coalesce the quote-unquote establishment behind him at all. Finished with three delegates, about 280,000 votes, out by South Carolina. You know, we got a sense as 2016 that the primary had begun last year, that the world of Republican politics had kind of left Jeb Bush by, that he was a classic pre-Obama conservative. and that the Obama presidency had very much changed the mentality and priorities of Republican primary voters, and that he hadn't changed with them. It is worth noting that none of the Bushes endorsed Trump other than George P. Bush in Texas. He has that commissioner job, and I have no doubt wants to be on good terms with most Republicans down in his state. But if you'd said that the Republican nominee would be opposed by the Bush family in 2016, most people would be very surprised by that, and that a Republican nominee could win with the staunch opposition of the Bush family. The continuing rumors that Bushes supported overtly or covertly the Hillary Clinton and other Democrats, I think, hurt their reputation amongst Republican circles. So I think that in the end, the Bush family is simply not as influential as people thought it was going to be for a long time.
Excellent choice. Yeah, that's such a good choice. I'd not even thought about Jeb Bush because he was such a non-factor early on in the year, but he raised that $120 million that everybody thought would be this war chest that nobody else could compete with. For some reason, he spent almost all of it attacking Marco Rubio, which I think maybe helped to knock down Marco Rubio a little bit, but it certainly didn't help Jeb Bush. He was a non-factor in Iowa. He was just thrilled as punch that he finished fourth in New Hampshire, and then he was a blip on the radar screen in South Carolina. Never got on message. Well, he got a message, I guess, but nobody was ready for it. Maybe Bush fatigue was a factor, but that's an excellent, excellent choice. And Jim, if I could only give one piece of advice to our listeners in response to that choice, please clap. I am going to go with one that might be a little bit surprising, given the fact that he has accomplished quite a few things, almost all of them negative. But when it comes to the political year of 2016, I'm going to go with Barack Obama. And this is something that happened not only in this particular campaign, but basically in every campaign he has inserted himself in that didn't have his own name on the ballot. He spent so much time in October going from rally to rally to rally, pumping up Hillary Clinton, talking about how Donald Trump was a threat to the foundations of the republic, pounding the podium, demanding people get out, telling black voters that he'd be personally disappointed in them if they didn't get out and get behind Hillary Clinton. His agenda was at stake, yada, yada, yada. You go all the way back to 2009 when he tried to stump for Creed Deeds and John Corzine, telling congressional Democrats in 2010 after the stimulus and the Obamacare votes, hey, don't worry about it, you got me. Yeah, that got you nothing, Democrats. If Obama's not on the ballot, he doesn't help you at all. We proved it in 2009, in 2010, in 2014, and now 2016. Barack Obama as a surrogate gets you virtually nothing.
You know, Greg, I salute you. That's a really good pick. And in retrospect, like, if we end up doing these categories for the decade, I think you can make a really strong case that Barack Obama is the most overrated political figure of the past decade, because the idea that you look back on almost every single issue. There were times in office when he had very high approval ratings, times in office he had very bad approval ratings, but things like Obamacare were never popular. He never actually changed political viewpoints. He never actually moved public opinion in his direction on a bunch of issues. He enjoyed the advantages of an overwhelming amount of hype in 2008, and just enough gas in the tank to survive the Romney challenge in 2012. But you really look at his presidency and everything that Trump will be able to do to undo that, we're expecting him to in the next years. It'll be interesting to see how small the legacy of Obama is. And you want to talk about being overrated. I think there's a really strong argument. Also, it's very fitting that at one point people would call the Marco Rubio the Barack Obama of the Republican Party. Some interesting parallels there. Or some people arguing that Jeb Bush was, in fact, the Obama of the Republican Party.
You don't want to be the Obama of fill in the blank. Let's just point that out. Okay, so we've got our most underrated political figures, our most overrated political figures of the year. Now we're on to most honest. Jim, who's your winner?
All right, so I'm going to give this to Selena Zito, formerly of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, now writing for the New York Post and contributing to CNN. Now, she was based in Washington, Pennsylvania, in Western Pennsylvania, and so she had been talking to voters in the Rust Belt for a long while. You saw this in the coverage of 2008, 2012, and there are very few reporters and analysts who can write about working-class whites, a demographic that turned out to be a really key element of this year's election results, and she writes with a very nuanced eye and a very clear perspective, and to her credit, she's not a relentless cheerleader of this demographic. She is not afraid to spotlight the ugly side, but she always writes with a great deal of sensitivity and clarity about the lives of these Americans, who generally get very little attention from the traditional media when they write about the country as a whole. Or if they do, They get portrayed and stereotyped as racist, toothless hicks who are, in Obama's words, clinging to their guns and religion. And there's a real story to be told of these people, the story of their suffering, with, particularly during, you know, during the Obama era. But you could probably argue back through the Bush era and maybe even not getting much taste of the enjoyment of the dot-com boom of the Clinton era. That there was this was a very key element of this, the story of this election. And I think she did about as good a job as anyone of telling it. And for that, and that ability to see both the good and the bad and to write about it without stereotypes and sneering, is why I'd argue she was the most honest political figure of the year.
Excellent choice. And I believe, what's her quote that crystallizes it? Is that the working class, they take Trump seriously but not literally, and his critics take him literally but not seriously?
That's probably a very fair assessment. I say that as a guy who's been a Trump critic for a long time.
Well, let's move on to my pick now. Jim, I honestly thought very long and hard about giving it to us, but I'm not quite that egotistical. But I want to say, and others might disagree with this, I'm pretty proud of the fact that while we had strong opinions of different candidates and different moments of the campaign, I think we did our very best to call it fair. You know, we weren't huge Trump fans along the way, to say the least, but when he did things that were smart, we gave him credit for it. When he did things that were stupid, we said the same thing. And so I think a lot of folks, once they made up their mind on Trump, especially if you look at Twitter, no matter what he did, they found a way to make it negative. If they didn't like him, if they did like him, no matter what he did, it was perfectly defensible. And I like to think we struck a good balance there. But that's not the pick, officially. My pick is the most honest moment, which might be weaseling a little bit here. But I take you back to the last debate before the Iowa caucuses. That's the one that Trump skipped. And Ted Cruz ended up winning Iowa. And a lot of people thought he wasn't going to win it after saying point blank he was going to end ethanol subsidies, which is something that nobody else had the guts to do for cycle after cycle after cycle. John McCain, who hates pork, he weaseled on that in 2008. Scott Walker, who's not exactly a big government pork guy, when he was briefly in the presidential race, he had flipped over on ethanol by the time he quit the race. Here's Ted Cruz in that debate.
But I don't believe that Washington should be picking winners and losers, and I think there should be no mandates and no subsidies whatsoever. And indeed, my tax plan that I've introduced, it's available on our website. It's a simple flat tax for everyone. It'll produce enormous economic growth, and it eliminates every mandate, every subsidy. So there's no subsidies for oil and gas, no subsidies for anyone.
It was an up and down year for Ted Cruz. He had his good moments. He had his bad moments. Ultimately, by the end of the year, I think his presidential ambitions are weaker than they probably were when he first got out of the race. But that moment and the fact that the voters didn't punish him for it, was honest, and it was good to see that the people didn't flinch at that.
A really interesting choice. It does feel like, you know, Greg, that doesn't sound like it was January. It feels like decades ago. Also, I just want to say, I know you said it was not really your nomination, but I'll accept that award anyway. And just to make the observation, like, fairness and objectivity get used interchangeably, but they're not actually the same thing.
Right.
Listeners of this podcast know you and I, we have lots of opinions. We have lots of views of the people we cover. Some we like, some we don't like. I don't think either of us would pretend to be objective. Having said that, we try to be fair. And I don't know if we always live up to it in every dotted I and crossed T, but you know what? I haven't heard a lot of complaints about this and the way we handle this. And, when we do hear complaints, Greg, I ignore them. So, and here's the thing. Lots of people ignore complaints, but they're not honest enough to admit that they ignore complaints. So that's why we are the most honest political figures of 2016.
It always That's awesome. It also depends how people phrase their criticism. When they do it in all caps, probably not going to get much of a response. Got to be honest with you. Jim?
In the old days, they used to write that in crayon. Back when it took effort. Lazy trolls today.
First three year-end awards are in the books. We'll have three more tomorrow. Jim, talk to you then.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us, and be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.